thankful for the reading there just a few moments ago. We are talking about the sure salvation. And you can we're using that really as kind of a springboard to get started on the lesson this morning. Now, 2 Timothy was Paul's last epistle. That's generally the consensus of opinion, that he wrote this. And there's a lot of clues that you find that indicate it was the last thing. And especially, do you find it here in these verses? I think verse 6 just spells that out. The time of my departure is at hand. He says, I am already being poured out. Do you find that in the number of newer translations? The Old King James has, I am now ready to be offered. But actually the tense is, this is already taking place. So the apostle here anticipated a departure. Now the word that's used there as a departure is kind of has varied meanings, one of which, when they're trying to give explanations of what these words mean, the departure there, the figure is explained by some, it's like loosing a ship from its mooring. If you take the rope loose, you know, the ship is gone. There's also the idea mentioned here in verse 8 of eternal salvation. There is laid up for me a crown of righteousness. So you can see where his mind was. He knows the end is here, and he knows what the future holds, but he focuses on what he's done. It's kind of, verse 7, he looks over all of his life in three verses. And if we consider it that way and think about everything that's going through his mind, we might ask ourselves the same thing. You know, can we identify with Paul? What was the basis for his hope and confidence? And I think that we find this in verse 7 where it says, I have fought the good fight. I have finished the course. I have kept the faith. Those would be good things for anyone to say at the end whenever the time has come. So the first thing that we want to look at here is that he fought the good fight. Now the word there that's used as fought, it means to contend or struggle with great zeal in order to obtain something. So the idea is, I think here, that there's something to gain, and so you're contending for this and struggling for it. You're not passive in this, but you're active in seeking for something. And when you get into this and the subject of fighting the good fight, Paul mentions in 2 Timothy chapter 2 this time, he talks about being a good soldier. In 2 Timothy chapter 2, there's a number of things there. But he compared Christians with athletes and soldiers and farmers. I've got verse 5 there, but actually it's verse 3. You suffer hardship with me as a good soldier of Jesus Christ. 2 Timothy 2, verse 3. So being soldiers, we're going to be required at some point or another to be engaged in some kind of a fight. Now that goes counter to a lot of things that people think about Christians. I think a lot of people think of Christians as being, you know, entirely passive, you know, that they wouldn't holler fire if the flames were up to your knees or something, you know, along that line. Just entirely passive and never active or anything. But you see a different picture in the Scriptures. Not just of what's being done, but you see a lot of instructions on this to, indeed, fight the good fight of faith, which is exactly what Paul tells Timothy in 1 Timothy chapter 6, verse 12. Certainly his words there to Timothy must be a mystery to some folks who are Christians today. I don't think we need to just be fighting all the time, but at the same time, I don't think we've just got to lay down and take everything that comes our way. And say nothing whatsoever. No reaction at all. God's soldiers are expected to fight. And as a matter of fact, they must fight against certain things. In back in 2 Timothy 2 again, he mentions in verses 17 and 18, he talks a little bit here about error. Now, let me point out that error, whatever it is, it doesn't matter what it is, error. This isn't some mysterious thing that's floating around out here, some nebulous thing floating around like the fog, you know, it doesn't have a body or anything like that. Well, it's just air, you know, it's just out here somewhere like that and so on. Well, that's just not how it is. You know, error is something that's being taught by someone. I was going through the TV this morning. I was going to turn the news on, and I was kind of scrolling through the channels and one thing and another, and I was just noticing all the religious programming that's on there. And of course, I'm thinking to myself, well, you know, it's all the truth, isn't it? No, it's not. And every one of those programs has got someone who's on there, and they're preaching something. Now, there might be some of them that might be saying some things that are good and right. But there's some of them that are not. But again, here's this idea we get. Oh, well, you know, we can't do this. You know, error is just something, you know, it's not a person. And we shy away from this and what. And I just think to myself, have you ever read the New Testament? What did Jesus do when the Pharisees came along and some of their erroneous ideas? What did he do? Oh, well, that's okay. You be you and I'll be me. And I know that it's false and I know that's not the way it is. But, you know, it's okay. Is that what he did? No. No, he was engaged in meeting the opposition. And it wasn't something that was personal. He was trying to combat the error. But the error is always brought in and is always proclaimed by someone. People are involved, just like they are with the truth. In 2 Timothy chapter 2, I'm saying all this because these are hard words. Their talk will spread like gangrene. Some translations have cancer. Among them are Hymenaeus and Philetus. You even mentions them by name. Men who have gone astray from the truth, saying that the resurrection has already taken place, and they upset the faith of some. I guess that would upset the faith. It would make the faith null and void, Paul writes in 1 Timothy 15. So it was a serious matter. It was error. And there were people teaching it. He goes so far as to name them. He didn't always do that. But he did it here. So, as soldiers of Christ, you fight against error. And we all know that we're supposed to fight against temptation. In 1 Timothy chapter 10, verse 13, no temptation taken you, but such is common to man. God will, with the temptation, provide a way of escape. You know, the temptations are common to man. What are we supposed to do about that? Just roll over and let the temptation take us? Or do we do like it says in James, that we resist the devil? We resist the temptation. I think you're putting up a little bit of a battle there when we do that. And then I like Galatians chapter 6 and verse 9, where I like this because I think this speaks against being discouraged. You know, it's real easy to be disappointed with a lot of things. And sometimes disappointment leads to discouragement. But they're not the same. But this is really talking about discouragement in Galatians chapter 6 and verse 9. Let us not lose heart in doing good, for in due time we will reap if we do not grow weary. You'd have to go a long, long time to find an event where the Apostle Paul was discouraged. Now, he was disappointed. And I think rightly so in a number of cases. But discouraged, never see it. No, it's all part of it. That fighting the good fight. And he says, I have fought the good fight. And certainly, we would all say, that's what he's done. We all ask ourselves the question, is that what we're doing? fighting the good fight? Or are we just, you know, just letting everything go? No interest, no response, no nothing involved whatsoever. Another thing he says here is that he had finished the course. Some translations have finished the race. But living as a Christian is like running a race. Now, another thing that Paul does outside of likening Christians to soldiers, he likens Christians to athletes. He does over there in 2 Timothy. But in 1 Corinthians chapter 9, verses 24 through 26, he does this specifically here. Do you not know that those who run in a race all run, but only one receives the prize? Run in such a way that you may win. Everyone who competes in the games, now those would have been athletic games, exercises self-control in all things. You play by the rules, you get ready for a race, you prepare, you train, and everything else that goes along with that, that's a self-control. They do it to receive a perishable wreath or crown, but we an imperishable. Therefore, I run in such a way as not with having aim. I box in such a way, that would be with games, as so I'm not just beating the air. You know, when you run a race, I've always tell people, you couldn't tell it by looking at me or watching me move around much anymore, but I ran a lot when I was younger, ran in college, track in college. And I remember that whatever the event was and you were running in it, I usually ran the same ones all the time, but you had a starting line and you had a finish line. And you could be halfway or two-thirds down there and in first place. And if you stopped, they gave you nothing. And you could stand there all day and over until your tongue fell out of your head saying, but I was in first place. And the answer would still be the same. You didn't finish. You get nothing. He says everybody runs in a race. One gets a prize. Some win, some lose. That's how it is, isn't it? And when we're involved in this race, striving for it, we go all the way, right to the end. And we need to run this race with some patience. Look at Hebrews chapter 12. Hebrews chapter 12 and verses 1 and 2. Therefore, since we have so great a cloud of witnesses surrounding us, let us also lay aside every encumbrance and the sin which so easily entangles us, and let us run with endurance the race that's set before us. In other words, you throw those things off. They're going to weigh you down. Nobody goes out. I never did see a track race in all the times that I was ever in competition or afterwards. Watch on TV. Used to watch it a lot on TV. Don't much anymore. But I never saw anybody go out there and get up to the starting line and have a refrigerator on his back. Now you just imagine that. I was in a race one time, I thought I had a refrigerator on my back. The guy next to me was so fast, I couldn't believe it. Anyway, or I was dragging something. But you know what? You lay those things aside. And here he's talking about this being sin. Lay it aside. Make your running the race easier for yourself. You need to do this. You're not looking for somebody to come along there and get a hold of you and drag you along. You do it. Lay aside these things. Every encumbrance, the sin which so easily entangles, whatever it is. Fixing our eyes on Jesus, the author and perfecter of faith, who for the joy set before Him endured the cross. Did He go all the way in that race? All the way. He endured the cross, despising the shame. And what happened? He sat down at the right hand of the throne of God. Nothing was going to get in His way. Lay everything aside to run the race, to finish the course. That's what needs to be done. In verse 3 of Hebrews, we consider Him who has endured such hostility by sinners against Himself, so that you will not grow weary and lose heart. He's an example of endurance for us, endurance all the way to the end. What do we see in Philippians chapter 4, verse 13? People like this a lot. I think sometimes it just becomes something that goes on a bumper sticker or a magnet on the refrigerator or something like that. I can do all things through Christ who strengthens me. Well, why don't we practice that? Why don't we go to Him for instruction? Why don't we follow His example, His lead? Why don't we look at Him as an example of endurance? And you know, every time I look at 2 Timothy chapter 4 and verse 7, there's one word in there right in the middle that leaps out at me. It's that word, finished. You know, there's an emphasis here on finished. Now, this is what I've done. I guess Paul's kind of saying, I say it a lot to, you know, among the family. They get started on something. And not just my immediate family, all the family. You know, we'll talk about this and that and the other, talk about things gone by, everything else. And eventually I'll tell people, well, you know, that's what happened. It happened. I don't have a time machine. I can't go back and change any of that. Wish I did. I'd go back and change a lot of things, wouldn't you? If you could do that. Just for a little while. Think of what it might be. But we don't have anything like it. Paul's finished the course. He's going to stand before God in judgment. And the thing that you realize here is he's ready for that. He's willing to stand before God for whatever he's done. Can you say the same thing? Can I say the same thing? There's a real challenge there, isn't it? On that. The third point is, he had kept the faith. Now this was the faith that some had their faith shipwrecked. We looked at 2 Timothy. Let's look at 1 Timothy chapter 1, verses 18 through 20. This command I trust to you, Timothy my son, in accordance with the prophecies previously made concerning you, that by them you fight the good fight, keeping faith and a good conscience, which some have rejected, and they've suffered shipwreck in regard to their faith. And again, he names these. A couple of them. Hymenaeus, Alexander, whom I have delivered over to Satan, so that they will be taught not to blaspheme. So faith is possible to be shipwrecked. We need to keep the faith. That's an individual responsibility. I have kept the faith. There might have been others that helped him and assisted him in as time goes on, just like there are some that help us and assist us. But you know what? Each one of us, just like Paul, we have to personally, individually keep the faith. It's a personal responsibility. Otherwise, if we don't keep it, well, it'll become shipwreck. And we don't want that at all. So, we go over here to James chapter 1. And look with me at verses 2 through 4. You know, there's many trials and tribulations that are going to come along. You consider it all joy, my brethren, when you encounter various trials or temptations, knowing that the testing of your faith produces endurance. And let endurance have its perfect result, so that you may be perfect and complete, lacking in nothing. If you think about that and the trials and tribulations, and you're going to encounter these kinds of things, and you know, but you persevere, you practice endurance and all that and everything. I go back again to him talking about finishing the course or finishing a race. I don't know if they do it anymore or not, but there used to be a thing where they would run a race. Individuals would run this race, and they would even run it in the Olympics. And I remember watching it in the Olympics, and it was almost like a steeplechase type thing. I don't know what they called it. I don't remember exactly. But you would watch these fellows, and they would run along, and then eventually, you know, they would have to go over here, and they'd have to go over a hurdle or a hedge or a gate or a fence or something, and then they would come along, and there'd be this, you know, this, I don't know what you wanted to call it. There was this water out there, and they would have to go over there and try to jump through it or just run through it, take a couple steps through it, and they went on. It was obstacles. That's what they were, obstacles. And they were on this course that essentially, you know, was an obstacle course, and they would have to, everybody would have to run this. And they would go so far, and an obstacle would come up. Now you meet it, what are you going to do? How are you going to handle this? And, of course, they'd done this many times, and they knew when the obstacles came, you know, what to do and so on, and where the course was at, and to stay on the course and all that. But they weren't out there all the time, jumping over a little body of water or over heads. They weren't doing that just every second. There were times well, they were running on dry, even ground with nothing out there as an obstacle. Nothing. And then obstacles came along. Isn't life like that? We go along and everything's going fine. And then what happens? Well, here's an obstacle comes along. What do we do now? What do you do next? That's the important thing. An obstacle comes up in front of us. What do we do next? Do we meet the obstacle? Are we successful in meeting it? And then we go on to continue. He says there's going to be various trials. You're going to encounter various trials. Don't think for a moment that you're going to go through life and it's all going to be some smooth race with nothing out there in the way. That's not how it works, is it? No. But then there's endurance, and when you have that, you get this good result. You don't lack anything. That's good. So the trials and tribulations come along. And really, I think sometimes they have a measure of helpfulness to them, because they'll allow us to learn and be stronger, and the next time, do better. Now, finally, having kept the faith, the reward is for those who finish the race. In Hebrews chapter 11 and verse 6, it says, without faith it is impossible to please God, for he who comes to God must believe that he is, and that he is a rewarder of those who seek him. The reward is for those who finish. As I said before, they don't give anything for being in first place 2/3 of the way through a race. It's for those who finish the race. I think one of the great things to watch is we used to have a festival there in Shoals, and they came up with a 5K run or a walk. I never participated in it. But anyway, you know, you'd see people and they didn't win. They finished out someplace out there in the middle of the pack, you know. They finished 25th or something like that. We used to have a lot of people come for this thing. All the different age groups and everything like that. And a lot of times people would come off of there. They weren't first place, but they wanted to hear their time. It was important to them. Let me hear my time. And they would give them their time when they crossed the finish line. This is how long it took you to run this 5K race. And they wanted to hear that, and they wanted to compare it to their other times in races, whether they'd done better or not. So they were looking forward to that. That was a reward for them when they crossed the finish line, that they had done better. They had improved. All a good thing, isn't it? 1 Peter chapter 1, verse 9. Obtaining as the outcome of your faith the salvation of your souls. That's what Paul was looking forward to, that crown of righteousness, salvation of the soul. Revelation chapter 2, verse 10, we know that, don't we? Be faithful until death, I will give you the crown of life. Take your songbooks, turn to the songs been selected. The crown of life is a gift that's bestowed by the Lord. And Paul says in 2 Corinthians chapter 4 and verse 8, says, in regard to Jesus, He is the righteous judge. He's going to judge righteously. He's not going to judge based on whim or something like that. It's not going to be, well, I like this person better than I like that person over there. No, no, He's not going to do that. He's going to judge appropriately and righteously. We also can anticipate such a gift as Paul did, and have such hope, and have this confidence as well. Because he says, this is also in 2 Timothy 4 verse 8, unto all them also that love his appearing. It's something that's available to everyone. Can we help you today to lay hold of eternal life? Can we help you today to find the sure salvation and start today building up yourself in the faith to do the things that Paul was talking about at the end of his life? You know, he didn't get all of this just all at one time. He had a history and a legacy, and everything that we know about him led him to this particular point. So there's a starting place. Believing in Jesus, repenting of your sins, being baptized. And sometimes, you know, we get off course. But you know, one of the things you've got to do is you've got to find your way back to where the course is. Who's driving down last Monday? I don't know how it happened. I was looking for 315 through Columbus to avoid the construction work. I got in a lane with that truck and then I couldn't get out of it. Nobody would let me over. I thought ill of them for a little while. That wasn't a very nice thing to do, but anyway. So I had to get off and go down, and I ended up down at the Ohio State University campus in that moving truck. And I had the GPS on, and it kept telling me to go around this block and do this and that and the other, turn here, turn there. And one of the things it kept telling me was, follow the route, follow the route, follow the route. The problem was, every route that they put me on had been plowed up. And I wandered about and circled about, and I thought, I'll keep making the circle bigger. You know what I was doing? I was trying to get back on track. And eventually I saw a sign that said 315. I didn't care if it was north or south. I was going that way. I could turn around. But you know, when you get off track, you look to get on the right track if you're in a car or anything like that. You get back to where you ought to be. Back to the good way, the safe way, the sure way. Sometimes that happens spiritually. We get off track. Something happens. It kind of puts us off a little bit. But we can get back on there. Repent of things. Make a change. Pray to God for forgiveness. But get back to where you ought to be. And if we can help you to do that, we'd be glad to do so. If you're subject to the invitation, why don't you come all together, we stand and sing.